Welcome to The Backbone, a journey inside finance at a startup. I'm your host, Shabham Datta, at Shabham on Twitter. On The Backbone, we're obsessed with finance and operations at startups. We take a close look at finance functions within various startup companies by talking to finance leaders that are in there day in and day out. We chat startup finance, metrics, operations, and everything in between. Joining me on this episode of The Backbone is Samiksha Khanna, VP Finance and Operations at Uberflip, a content platform that allows you to build out personalized experiences for all your marketing campaigns. Samiksha oversees the finance, operations, IT, channel, and people and culture functions at Uberflip. She began her career in Vancouver 20 years ago in the technology industry and has gone on to work in the UK, Melbourne, Auckland, and now Toronto. Samiksha specializes in creating and driving the day-to-day implementation of a company's strategic plan, including defining and measuring key objectives, implementing procedures and processes, and diving deep into the data to uncover meaningful insights. Samiksha obtained her CPA CMA designation while working in Vancouver. And so without further ado, let's hear from Samiksha herself, VP of Finance and Operations at Uberflip. Hey, good morning, Samiksha. Thanks for coming on The Backbone this morning. And we've got a lot to cover, so I want to get started right away. You've been in the tech space now for over 15 years, going back to your days at Intrinsic Software. From there, you've been at large organizations like SAP and TELUS to fast-growing tech startups like Points, Vend, and now Uberflip. You've also been a bit of a globetrotter. You've spent time in Vancouver, the UK, Melbourne, Auckland, and now in Toronto. Talk to me about your journey into tech and how it all started for you.
Hey, good morning. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me. And yeah, kind of going back to a bit about my journey, it actually all started with McDonald Detweiler. A friend of mine from college gave me a referral in, and after a few years, I was recruited to Intrinsic. To be honest, most of the roles I took in Vancouver were from referrals. There's a lot to be said about working at a company where you already know the people and can get an honest assessment of the environment. The one thing I always loved about working in tech is the potential. The potential to expand responsibilities within the company or the potential to work internationally. I've always said yes to taking on new projects and really took the time to understand how the business runs. I ask a lot of questions to understand the goals that marketing, sales, engineering, etc. needed to achieve to make the company successful. And it was because of my ability to understand both finance and what was important to other departments to run their business that I was asked to travel to different regions and help with the fiscal and strategic planning.
And we're going to dive a bit more into the kind of operating and finance aspects for sure. Talk to me about that kind of journey that you went on to different places around the world. Did you notice different things that impacted how you, well, how that, what shaped you as a finance leader today?
Oddly enough, I was expecting when I first started traveling internationally that things would be very different and that I wouldn't understand the cultural differences between North America and, let's just say, working in Singapore or Melbourne. Maybe the obvious answer is things were pretty much the same. So businesses really want to become successful. They want to have employees that are happy. They want to have customers that stay with them. So really just focusing on, it was more the culture within the companies that was more different, but the end goal always seemed the same. And it was really just, again, just asking a lot of questions and being adaptable to change. Like, that to me is the biggest asset you could have, knowing that what you did month one is going to be somewhat different from month two, and you may pivot in month three. And it's just having that ability to not get hung up on this is how we always do it and looking at more like how can we do it better.
So just want to unpack that last bit that you said, not keeping set on our ways of what to do and what we've done in the past. And, you know, large organizations tend to be fault of that. They've been around for a very long time and they tend to be stuck in their ways of doing things. So you have a very unique perspective on that, I would imagine, given that you've worked at big companies like SAP and TELUS and startups as well, like Vend and now Uberflip. So how would you compare and contrast those different, I guess, cultures and environments?
I absolutely love working at small, medium-sized tech companies. If your motto is to get shit done, then work at a small startup. in a small startup, you have access to like the senior leadership team, you're exposed to more interdepartmental work, and I find personally it's less political. For the most part, people care less about the title, more about making a difference. And I also find in smaller companies, there's less silos. At larger companies, you work and stay within your department. So everybody, you maybe have a department, a finance team of like 30 people, and you mingle with those 30 people most of the time. Whereas in a smaller company, chances are you're working closely with other departments and you're exposed to their goals and how they operate. And many people in smaller companies are wearing, like, we've all heard of like the many hats theory. So people in small companies are doing a bit of finance, sales, marketing. So you get it subject to different goals. And that to me is what I enjoy the most about the smaller companies is that ability to change, is that ability to come in on, every day and there'll be some different priorities that you're focusing on versus in larger companies, you really have your role and, to kind of your future set out for you. You kind of just know this is what you're going to be doing on a day-to-day basis.
It makes a lot of sense, and definitely have heard that in the past. Mm-hmm. Want to move to your current role now at Uberflip. So first of all, I'm familiar with Uberflip and what the company does, but for the benefit of the listeners, tell me about Uberflip and what it's all about.
No problem. I'll be happy to. Uberflip is the world's number one content experience platform. We empower B2B marketing and sales teams to create personalized content experience to engage accounts, nurture prospects, and convert leads, all without the help of IT. It's our mission to put control back into the hands of marketing teams and deliver high converting experiences that put the customer front and center.
And then another organization that you're also heavily involved with is The Big Push. So talk to me a bit about that and what it's all about.
Okay, so I could talk to you a bit about The Big Push. I'm extremely lucky to be part of this. What The Big Push is, it's a women-led collective, and we support women founders through a service for equity model. Essentially, what we do is we provide equity for service programs. We help identify the business challenges, and then we roll up our sleeves and help execute on those goals. So it's not a, let's meet for coffee and I'll give you some advice. It's more, let's work together on your business plan, and let's help get the CEO to Series A ready.
Got it. So you're working with kind of female entrepreneurs, helping them get from seed to Series A, or do you start working pre-seed as well?
We will work with them on pre-seed in some instances too. It really comes down to if their product is at a marketable or almost marketable state. So as long as they have a product that's in market and they're generating some revenue, then we will work with them on getting them close to the seed already, the seed level, but it's really working with them on once they get that seed level to the Series A piece.
Well, that's really awesome. And have you been doing that prior to Uberflip, or this was something that you noticed after you started at Uberflip? How long have you been working on the Big Push initiative?
It's something that I started prior to Uberflip. It was shortly prior before starting at Uberflip. And when I took the role at Uberflip, I mentioned to them that I'm part of this women's collective. And the great thing about them is that they were very supportive. And every once in a while, I may need to take some time off to go and work for some of the women-led companies. And they've been very supportive at the time. And in a few instances, we've actually hosted a couple of the Big Push events at our office.
Yeah, I definitely remember one of those. I was lucky enough to be on one of the panels there.
And you did great.
First of all, the Uberflip office is really awesome. So everyone should check it out if they get a chance. But that's really awesome. So Uberflip recently raised $32 million US in growth financing led by UpData Partners. What are some of the lessons that you learned from this fundraise process, or words of wisdom that you would share with fellow finance leaders who are or might be going through a similar process?
Some of the lessons we learned, the biggest one is it takes a lot more time and effort than you think. It's not just financial data and metrics that you'll be asked for. It's also marketing, product, people, and culture. Consider it like a home inspection where they're looking into every room and under the carpets and be prepared to answer the same question in many different narratives. And oh my God, there are so many lawyers and legal documents you'll be reviewing over and over again. For me, it was really just about staying organized and documenting who does what and what you need to kind of supply internally and externally. Furthermore, some of the words of wisdom I have is it's never too early to get to keep a clean set of records. You know, I would recommend starting in the very early days with a good bookkeeper or some full-time accountant to get your financials in order and your key business indicators defined and measured. I would also recommend telling everyone in the company that you're looking for funding. I worked for a company before where only a few people had privilege to this information, and it makes it much more difficult to ask other departments for data because you're kind of dancing around the reason why you need it and you're trying to ask in a roundabout way. Whereas Uberflip, although we didn't provide a step-by-step update, we did tell people right at the very beginning that what we were doing and what we were looking for. And it made such a difference because everyone at Uberflip was super helpful when it came to providing extra details that I needed during the due diligence questions. They weren't asking why I needed this. They understood the purpose for it and they went out of the way to help me.
Yeah, oftentimes, you know, fundraising is a team sport. And if not everyone on the team is aware, then, you know, like you said, they're always questioning, well, why do you need that? You've never asked for that before.
Exactly. And it's a very different detail too. It's very specific information too.
Yeah, it's like, why do you need this particular contract? I can give you all these other ones, but... that makes a lot of difference for sure. And then so doing all of that, obviously you've got a day job, which is being the VP finance and operations at Uberflip. So with all these kind of ad hoc tasks that come about the fundraising process, how do you balance your day-to-day with this fundraising project?
Well, my question is quite funny because my honest answer is I did the fundraising during the day and I did my day job in the evening. It was a very busy time and sometimes it was hectic, a bit of a hectic process. But in my mind, I saw it as a means to an end. Working late and on the weekends is not something you want to do every week, but doing it for a few months and being able to close a successful raise with great partners, well, then, you know, the effort pays off in the end and you're willing to push through it.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, now obviously we can laugh about that after the fact, you know, having raised the funding and having partners like UpData by your side. And so if I look back on your career so far, many of the roles that you've been in have been operations exclusively. You're a CPA by training, and then oftentimes finance and operations tend to go hand in hand. And so why do you think that is? Why are a lot of, you know, finance leaders also very much involved with the operations?
That's a good observation. So the easy answer for me is everything is centered around people and money, business costs, revenue, employees, hiring, salary costs, etc. And I think finance folks get involved in operations because they're natural problem solvers. And it's part of their nature to look at doing things more efficiently. We also provide a sober look at the business. We have no emotional ties to certain sales and marketing strategies. We just look at the performance and measure it against the original plan. We could also provide financial insights into what assumptions were made and the results of those assumptions. What I like the most about the operational part is your direct impact on the business and how we can really work with the department leaders to help them run their business.
Would you say that, you know, having an accounting designation made you a better operator? And then on the flip side, how does being an operator make you a better finance leader? Like, I'm trying to understand how one may have impacted the other, because, you know, to be, I guess, a director of operations or VP of operations, you don't necessarily need a accounting designation. So I'm just wondering if it's helpful to have that.
For me, it was helpful because it helped me, and I used to kind of laugh and say this, translate between departments, because I can go and talk to finance about what was important to them in terms of how they viewed the business, and then be able to translate that to the business, back to the business, and say, okay, these are the metrics, this is how we're measuring it. So be able to be like, sometimes I was the diplomat between the finance department and the business departments, because, you know, I understood both the goals. So very early on in my career, when I was working at McDonald Detweiler, I was in a meeting with one of the VPs of engineering. He was the head of a business department. And he showed us a really great example of how finance and businesses, they operate a different set of rules. Like, he showed an example of a straight line and basically saying, this is how finance operates. Like, this rules are set out and everything kind of falls into a category or a bucket. Whereas the business follows its own set of rules and it pretty much just is flexible. And there's this line that curves a lot. And really kind of what the point is of the operational role is to see where those lines intersect and help work with each department to kind of help achieve their business goals.
Yeah, no, that's very helpful. So let me unpack that. So now, you know, at Uberflip, you are officially VP finance and operations. You know, prior you may have had finance roles or you may have had operations roles. Now it's combined together. Mm-hmm. And so how has that transition been? Whereas before, like you said, you were being the liaison between the operations group and the finance group, but now it's just you. So you are also the finance group. How has that been for you?
Well, to be honest, it's not just me. I have a really great finance team that I work with. And what I like about being in this role right now is it's the best of both worlds. I get to dip my toe into the finance world and I get to rely very, very heavily on Udi, who is our director of finance, to help on the accounting side and on help supporting the business. And I also get to work very closely with the heads of sales, customer success, engineering, people in culture and marketing, and work with them on, so we know what the budget areas are, we know what the business plans are, but then they could translate that into what kind of metrics are you going to be measuring on? Like, what are your goals for, let's say, Q1, and how can the finance department help support you to hit those goals? Like, what data do you need from us? What support do you need from us? And again, it goes back to providing that sober look, that look of, these are just the numbers, these are the assumptions we made at the beginning, how are we tracking towards that, and at what point do we know that either we're going to miss the target and we need to pivot, or we're on track and just keep doing what we're doing.
So you're really able to see the full picture and being kind of an all-encompassing, see all the operations and bridge that with the metrics that are important on the finance side. So that makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. One last question before we hop into our quickfire round, and that is, in your opinion, what is the importance of the finance function at a technology company?
Well, I won't go into the most obvious reasons why technology companies need finance, but it goes back to what I was saying earlier about just really being able to help the business succeed. You know, what I've noticed is a lot of high-tech companies, especially the ones I've worked at, and they're usually smaller, and you do have the department heads and people working in those departments managing five or six different things. And most of the time, they're just executing. They're just trying to make the customer happy. They're trying to deliver experience that makes the customer happy. And what we don't have a lot of time for is to look back and go, how do we actually do? Like, how do we achieve our goals? And are we on the right track? And so that's where finance really comes in, to be able to show them this is, we're on the right track. Or, you know, even though we are thinking we're delivering a happy customer, we actually have these churn rates. Or even though we think we're actually going after the right market fit, we've been selling to a different customer profile. Or maybe we're actually, or maybe in instances, we are hitting exactly what we need to be doing, and we continue doing it. So we continue funding that effort and we continue to see it through because it's success for us. So that to me is where the finance role really takes the most important piece, is being able to support the business and what they need to be to be successful.
Right. Yeah. One thing that really resonated with me, that something that you said earlier, is that finance is really a second sober thought, or mm-hmm. something that, you know, people in finance don't tend to be emotionally tied to particular sales and marketing campaigns and things like that. So people in finance can be very objective in evaluating how the campaigns are doing, and then translate that back to the various departments of the business to make sure that everyone is on board in achieving the company's goals and objectives. Now what I'd like to do is jump into our quickfire round. Okay. And so the way this works is I'll ask you a couple of questions and you'll have 10 to 15 seconds to respond to each. How does that sound?
That sounds great.
All right, let's do it. So what is your go-to online resource for all things startup finance related?
So I use anything from LinkedIn. I also am a big fan of David Skork. I think I'm saying his last name right. For Entrepreneurs.
Yeah,
yep. And Thomas Nung. So those are kind of like they're kind of the gurus when it comes to all things startup finance related.
Yeah, definitely. I've heard a bunch of guests mention those two guys specifically. So yeah, for sure. And what's your favorite productivity hack?
So I schedule everything. I schedule everything in my calendar. I look at whether it's an appointment with the dentist, whether it's an evening out with my husband, or like lunches, I schedule everything, and that helps me become more productive. And I also subscribe to the no more 0 days motto.
Talk to me about that. What is that? The no more 0 days.
It's called the no 0 days motto. Sorry, and it's an article that was written on Reddit that I read about 2 years ago, and it was really just about somebody writing in saying, I have all these things I want to accomplish, and I can't accomplish anything because I'm working too hard, or I don't have enough time in the day. And the motto behind it, or the philosophy behind it, is just do one thing. So if you want to read a book, just do something every day, even if it's a small amount. So if you want to get through a book and you don't have time to say dedicate a whole chapter to in one day, this whole philosophy is like, just read two sentences. You know, if you can't work out, just do one push-up. If you if you can't make a phone call to somebody and catch up with them, you know, be able to send them a quick email. So it's really just about, you don't need to bite off the biggest, you don't need to take off a big bite. Just every single day, do a small bite and you eventually get there.
Wow, that's profound. Yeah, like at least you've, you know, done something regarding that task or whatever you set it out. That makes a lot of sense. And I've definitely not heard that before. So that's a new one.
Yeah, you should look it up.
I will. What's one thing you don't leave the office before finishing?
So going back to my calendar and how I schedule everything, I look at my calendar every single day. So I look at it at the end of the day, I look at it for the next day, and I look at it for the next week. And I want to just make sure, the worst case for me is to come into work and have meetings that I didn't know about and not be prepared for. So I always check my calendar at the end of the day. I check it again first thing in the morning, and I check it for the following week too.
So I guess your calendar is the most used app on your phone and
absolutely
your computer. And what's one tech jargon that makes you cringe?
Oh, I think sometimes all of it does, to be honest. There's so many like serial entrepreneur, and I'm hearing the word AI on everything. It's, you know, I'm okay with them once in a while, but when you hear them all the time, they all kind of get under my skin. But I think things like attaching AI to so many things that are not really AI is probably my latest pet peeve.
Gotcha. Yeah, for sure. And then you start seeing a mishmash of like, oh yeah, we're the latest AI that is disrupting blockchain.
Exactly.
And is AI for your AI.
I know. AI for your AI. I like that. But then it starts to dilute what the meaning of it really is. And then even worse is that people have a misunderstanding of what it really is, because they think it's one thing because it's been attached to so many things.
And what's the best advice that you received so far in your career?
I've received lots of pieces of advice. The latest one that I've kind of been thinking about lately is, don't let perfect be the enemy of good. And it was really resonant in when it comes to companies that are scaling. It's, we want things to be done well. And if you're a type A person like me, you want to be able to do things well or perfect the first, you know, at the get-go. But when you're working in a company that's scaling and growing, you just have to get comfortable with, we know it's not perfect, but it's better than what we have, so let's go with it. And then we have the time to perfect it or refine it, we'll do it at that time. And it's really just being okay with something that you know it's not as good as it could be, but due to time, resources, or just the lack of understanding of what this will be, you just go with good enough.
Yeah, and I guess that really resonates well with you know, software in general. Like, the very first version of software is never perfect. There's always bugs there, and you're always iterating on it. So I guess this lends itself well as being a part of the process within a software company.
Exactly.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, thanks so much for your time this morning, Samiksha. It's been really great chatting with you about Uberflip, about the big push, Uberflip's recent fundraising round, and how you've been able to balance the, you know, day-to-day of being VP Finance and Ops, along with the tasks that came about for the fundraising, as well as why it's so common to have finance and operations get tied in together. It's really been a fascinating chat, and I enjoyed it a lot. Thanks again.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right. Take care. Bye now.